Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro. And this week, my guest is the co-founder of Bridge Technologies, Nicholas Smith. Nick, good afternoon.
Afternoon, John. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for being on the show with me.
Absolute pleasure.
We have crossed paths before. A long time ago, I was reviewing products from your company. You're most famous for the Bridge keyboards for the iPads. These are awesome aluminum keyboards which mate beautifully with an iPad and make it look like a MacBook. They're awesome. And so I thought we'd tell the listeners the story going way back on how these beautiful aluminum Bridge keyboards came into existence. So tell us about the original Bridge Kickstarter project and we'll go from there.
Awesome. So Bridge has got a really interesting story. Its legacies with Kickstarter sort of dating back to March, April of 2012. And it was really a concept that was hatched by three mates out of Menlo Park in California, all with very, very different backgrounds, but all with a very entrepreneurial spirit behind what they were doing. And this was at a point in time where I suppose there were two dynamics. One was that Kickstarter was just starting to really gain momentum. And then two, obviously, the iPad was really gaining a significant traction and had, you know, accelerated growth. So these guys came up with the concept of solving a very, very simple solution, which was let's build a really beautiful, premium, stunning keyboard made out of the same materials as the iPad, which is aluminium, as I say it. So they did. So they launched a Kickstarter project in around April 2012 and were incredibly successful. They did a really, really good job of putting together the whole message and the video and the imagery around the actual pitch. And they ended up successfully raising or selling close to $800,000 in keyboards. And that was where it all began. And from there, actually, they successfully delivered the vast majority of their orders and were able to take the business from just initially a Kickstarter focus and then start to move into what would be the beginnings of a very niche brand.
This was in the iPad 2 days, right?
It was. It was actually one of the first. It was the first aluminium keyboard that worked, and what made the Bridge very unique back then is that it worked with the iPad 2, iPad 3, and then when Apple released the iPad 4, it also worked with that as well. So it had a little bit of a unique element to it in that sense.
So what was the problem? The original company did have a problem that's well known.
Yeah, it did. And you know, look, everything generates an opportunity, and I think that's where the way we look at it as well. I mentioned that these guys, good friends, but all from very, very different backgrounds. And as with the majority of Kickstarter projects, they start with a great vision that's incredibly focused on just the Kickstarter project itself, but not really much beyond that. And the nature of a Kickstarter project, and generally back then, it was a very small startup, and you needed to do everything yourself. So they all sort of disbanded. One went to China to work on the product. Another one was focused and stayed in, you know, in California, sort of trying to run the business and make sure the campaign was a success. And the other guy, sort of just maintained a constant involvement in the business. But unfortunately, what they didn't have, or fortunately for us, is that they didn't have a really strong vision post the Kickstarter campaign. And that all started to really unravel when they didn't think of the customer first. And you know, I'm a firm believer of all businesses that you've got, you know, irrespective of whether you're B2B or B2C, the customer needs to be at the center of your ecosystem, irrespective of how amazing your product is. And I think they may have lost vision of that, lost sight of that a little bit. And as a result, while by and large the majority of people that got a Bridge got an amazing little product and had a great experience.
I did, and I reviewed it, and it was awesome.
Thank you. Well, but there was also, unfortunately, a lot of customers that didn't. Now, what amplified that was that there would have been a lot of customers that reached out to customer support and had very, you know, prolonged periods of darkness in feedback. They have problems with units that were shipped back to get fixed that didn't actually get returned. All sorts of really, really small things that ultimately ticked a lot of people off. And in this day and age, when you're in an environment where it's so easy to to, you know, express your feelings online, it only takes a couple of people to be frustrated, and then that has a snowball effect. And I think what actually ended up happening, John, was that you found Bridges as a brand had a very niche and sort of cult following around it, but it also had equally a following of people that had an exceptionally bad experience.
I know, and they wrote me after I published the review and said, John, help.
Well, I think, and that's where, that's, you know, really how we started to get to know these guys. So if I could sort of jump ahead as to how we got involved was, you know, my background was in running a part of a software business in Asia. I was based in Singapore for the last 6 years, and I saw the bridge in Korea. And I think, like a lot of people, were looking at a mini MacBook, and being a sort of a tech savvy guy, I want the latest and greatest gadgets. So I tried to buy one, and I couldn't. So ultimately, what I did was, you know, my wife and a mate of mine who was also in Singapore, I said, I think we can try and get one of these. And so I tried, I couldn't. So we ended up buying 200 of them.
Where was that? Was it because you couldn't successfully complete the order, or they weren't shipping at the time, or what?
Weren't shipping at the time to Asian markets. And, and having lived there for so long, I knew that there was, you know, there are a lot of people in Asia that have got iPads. So, Toby, my now business partner, and my wife, we bought a couple of hundred of them, and I built a website, and all of a sudden we started selling them in the Southeast Asian market.
So you became sort of a licensed reseller in Asia?
Effectively, we're a distributor. I mean, if you were to look at the true definition of it. And, you know, whilst maintaining a day job with Adobe at the time, actually, and then, you know, my business partner as a M&A lawyer with a company called Ashurst.
M&A is managed,
mergers and acquisitions. Yeah. So things started to move along, and it was at that point where we started to get to know the founders really quite well, and we were saying, guys, what's happening? You know, the iPad Air had just been released, which obviously was gaining significant traction because that was the first foray of the iPad that Apple had done that was, you know, was much slimmer, was much lighter, actually the same amount of power as the iPad 4. But it really was a product that made the consumer want to upgrade. And naturally speaking, because we had a lot of followers and we'd built quite a presence in Asia, we were getting a huge amount of people asking us, hey, what are you doing for the iPad Air? And we're sort of looking at ourselves going, well, we've got no idea. We're actually not Bridge. We're just selling them.
That's one of the issues about the kind of business. I was talking to Patrick O'Neill recently, and you have to adjust to changes in the market, changes from Apple. You have to be able to engineer changes, and you have to be able to sort of engineer and cast into production those products in a timely way so that customers get what they want as soon as they can get it. It's tough.
It's really tough, and you know where we are today is a dramatically different business. But it's that refresh cycle that if you don't and can't adapt to it and get those new products out quickly, that really hurts because it's a reverse bell curve. If you're maximizing your sales opportunities when the new product releases, and every day that passes that you're not there, you're missing an opportunity.
Right, and I want to add a little color to the CRM, the customer relationship management system that Bridge started out with, which was practically non-existent. And that is, whenever you have a interaction with a customer, you have to track that. You have to put it in a database. You have to be able to call it up. You have to be able to say, give me a list of people who've got orders outstanding, or a list of people who've got machines or items in for repair, or show me the most recent email traffic from people who've got the biggest problem in our determination. And you've got to be able to basically track and database-ize every relationship you have with all your customers and be able to utilize it to do fulfillment and repairs and correspondence and everything. That's a major undertaking. And as you said earlier, the hardware was great, but they didn't think to create such a system before they went into shipping.
No, and unfortunately, I think back then it was centered around an amazing program called Excel.
It's great, but it doesn't do what you need.
It's great, exactly. But when it comes to the digital age and trying to use the one-to-one communication, not quite there.
Right.
So just to sort of go back to where we were in terms of how the devil do we end up having a keyboard company, well, when we started to probe the original team about what they were doing and what was their future direction and product roadmap around the Air and also really around the support and the brand support that they were putting into it, we soon discovered that they'd lost interest. They'd not checked out fully, but quite frankly, they weren't too far away from it. And that was at the point in time where we said, well, what do you need? Do you need investment? Do you want sort of added brain power? And given what we were doing as our day jobs at the time, I've actually got no idea why we said that, but we did. And they came back with an offer saying, you know, look at our existing stock and we'll give you a perpetual license to take on the brand
of
the IP.
You had an admiration for the product and you wanted it to flourish.
Well, I think it was a combination. It was a combination of that, but it was also the inherent entrepreneurs in us, which saw that's a business opportunity. Mm-hmm. They've got stock. They're in a distressed situation. You know, we've already proven that we can sell it in a more efficient, direct manner in any market, as long as we stay by a number of different principles online strategy perspective.
Selling in Asia, you must have built your own CRM system for your own distribution, right?
Well, my background is digital strategy. So prior to Adobe, I was with Accenture, and actually this is what I did for a living. So I knew how to do this on a much larger scale, admittedly. But when it came to applying those same, you know, practices to a much smaller business, it wasn't too difficult. And to be frank, it was also the right time because there's a lot of technology that had been developed, you know, platforms such as Shopify, you know, great fulfillment platforms like Shipwire and so on, that all of a sudden allowed us to have a point of presence in every major market from the UK, Hong Kong, Australia, LA, and Canada, and a great website that was already integrated into the fulfillment platform. So, you know, after we got rid of the 200 keyboards that were sitting in our spare bathroom in Singapore, we had our number one MO was to never see a keyboard again. From a fulfillment perspective, and we achieved that. So all of a sudden, we went from marketing to admittedly a huge population in Southeast Asia, but we were able to target UK, European markets, North America, Australia.
It's all about logistics.
Very, very, very easily and put a keyboard in front of them in a relatively efficient period of time. So it was when we mapped all of that out that we thought, actually, you know what, this could be a pretty good deal. And worst case, let's go ahead and let's just try and sell down this stock. So we did the deal, John. And
what was the deal? Did you acquire the company?
No, we did not. We actually didn't want to touch the company. What we wanted was the brand and the IP behind it. Mm-hmm. And with that, we got that with the stock that we'd purchased. So that was actually a challenge in itself because there was the perception that it was the same company, but in actual fact, it was completely had nothing to do with it except
for I tried to explain that in my reviews, make sure the readers understood, right?
Yeah, and it's actually really difficult to articulate in an email. We're the same kind of company, we've got the same product, but we've got nothing to do with you. And in reality, John, what ended up happening was that once we took over and we started to very, you know, aggressively get back into marketing from a, you know, Facebook perspective, we did get inundated with these horror stories. And that was where we soon realized that actually what was under the hood was not what had been perceived to us. So we had to do a huge amount of efforts and actually investment in making good to customers that had never received their keyboard, to customers
was it,
that
was it failure to ship to people who paid, or was it a quality control with keyboards that were not working right, or was it a mixture?
John, it was a mixture. Put it this way, last week we actually had a customer reach out to us and said, my Kickstarter keyboard has just arrived. I kid you not.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was it? Sitting on the beach in the Philippines?
I've got no idea. But when our head of operations told me, I said, this is awesome, because they actually reached out to say, funnily enough, I've actually got a new iPad since then. do you mind if I swap it for something? And this is classic. Yeah, of course. It's a classic example of
that's awesome.
We've got nothing to do, and it's actually going to cost us money because clearly the Kickstarter campaign had no financial benefit to us. But this is a customer who, you know, really has been treated
that's
poorly.
That's patience.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Must have been UK Post or something like that that was originally sending it because it took their pretty time.
But, so tell me about some of the, if you're ready, tell me about some of the tools that you used that were way beyond Excel spreadsheet for managing this CRM and logistics and delivery system.
Look, John, back then it came down to three systems. You know, we needed to build a website. You know, I've got a technical background, but like, let's face it, I'm not creative at all. But obviously, as a part-time job, we needed just to get it done. So we built the website on Shopify, an amazingly scalable, strong platform. That
Shopify was one of those companies that went down in the DDoS a couple of weeks ago.
It was, and that was the first time our website had been down ever.
I didn't mean to bring that up. It's a sore point. Just remembered it.
No, it wasn't at all. It was actually really interesting to us, and we actually learned a lot from it. You know, from a redundancy perspective, what do we do if that happens again? Because quite honestly, in 3 years, our website had never been down, except when maybe someone, possibly me, pressed the wrong button and did something that made it go down. So, you know, and that's the nature of a startup when it's just two or three people, you're doing everything. But so Shopify has been amazing. It was a combination of that and Shipwire, which is actually now an Ingram Micro company, but Shipwire is a 3PL, which basically is a cloud-based shipping platform, which, you know, they have points of presence, so warehouses in these different locations. And you know, when you take Shipwire and then match it with a Shopify, an order comes through Shopify.
Is it like Amazon where it's automated and a label gets printed and somebody slaps a label on a box and off it goes?
Practically speaking, yes. But it's sort of, to us, it's even better than that in the sense that we don't see a thing. An order hits our platform, and then it just gets pushed straight through to Shopify.
But it's echoed back to you and put in your system, so you know the customer who ordered it. Got it.
Yep. So we get all of that, and then it just pushes it across to Shipwire, and that order gets routed to the closest warehouse to them, and then it gets picked, packed, and shipped in the next 24 hours, assuming stock's on hand. So it really was a dream for us. So when you look at that from a order management and fulfillment perspective, then what we needed to do was to acquire customers and convert customers, and that's where, you know, we are internally grateful to Facebook. Facebook's given us the ability to target customers on the devices that would benefit from our products. So it's been a huge part of our marketing focus. But then when you sort of combine that with another platform, which sort of we say the big three, which is a platform called Klaviyo. Klaviyo, which enables us to do email marketing, but it's behavioral based.
So, folks, so if you get an email from Bridge Global and it has a list of products with a buy me button and it has that link, if you hover over it, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It doesn't say Bridge Global. It says Klaviyo email.
It's a long
string in a big yellow box, but don't worry, it's okay. That's the system they use.
Yeah, exactly. What that allows us to do is, you know, you mentioned before about managing that customer and knowing what they've bought, when they've bought it, where they live, you know, what their purchase history is, all of those sorts of different things. This platform goes even further in looking at when they looked at a product, what they added to their cart, what they didn't add to their cart, how many times have they been back to their site, all of those different things, which inherently, you know, it's our customer engagement that's our asset, because obviously we want to keep providing our customers with great products, but we need to learn and look at this data to be able to define what we're going to offer them and when we're going to offer it. It's as simple as that, and Klaviyo allows us to do that.
Fascinating. Well, we have to take a break here. We'll continue the discussion with Nicholas Smith after this quick message from Kelly. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
So we've done our part to pay the light bill. I'm back and talking to Nicholas Smith, the co-founder of Bridge Technologies. So where were we? We finished up talking about the software systems that you use, and this is a great lesson for anybody who's thinking about starting up a small company and shipping a product, is make sure that not only do you have a great product, but you've got the means and the database management, the customer relations system, and the logistics and the tracking to make sure that your customers get what they ordered. So this is a great story. What iPads are you supporting nowadays? How far back?
So obviously when the original Kickstarter was launched, it was the iPad 2, 3, and 4. We've effectively sunsetted those products. There's a small handful of the originals around, and quite frankly, they're probably more museum pieces now than anything else. But when we really relaunched the business, and there was a point in time there where we saw the opportunity was far greater than just doing this for 12 months and selling down the stock that we purchased, we built out a roadmap which took us literally right across the whole iPad range. You know, to give the background behind the design philosophy was, you know, 72.5% of people approximately, all they do is email, surf the web, and, you know, maybe write the check the odd document. And the reality is that to buy a laptop, to do that, it's a very expensive process. But the iPad, particularly the Office suite on iOS now, is more than capable. So when we started to look at what we needed to do, and the keyboard being the natural addition to really unlock that productivity and capability of the iPad, we started to think about, okay, well, for each iPad, there really does need to be a keyboard. So our journey started with the original iPad Air for our new product. And as the iPad Air went to the Air 2 and now the Pro 9.7, we've been able to maintain the exact same product but just adapt it so it's compatible across those three devices. So it was the first one. Then we went into the mini range and we took that same design philosophy where we were able to produce a keyboard with the same common structure and I suppose intent of creating a MacBook-like experience to the iPad.
You sent me one of those for the iPad Mini, and I reviewed it. It was great.
Indeed, yes, and that so that that keyboard again is universal across the iPad Mini 1, the iPad Mini 2, and the iPad Mini 3. Unfortunately, when Apple released the iPad Mini 4, they increased its length by about 3 millimeters, which meant, you know, for us to do it properly, we needed to recreate the product. So we did. But now what that means is we've got a complete, you know, mini package which spans all four iPad Minis. And then, of course, you've got the iPad, you know, 12.9, Pro 12.9, which is a big device. I've got one in front of me right now.
I've got a question about that. So do you use the same mechanism where you have those soft Teflon-like shims to hold the keyboard to the iPad?
We do.
Same
mechanism.
We do. The iPad Pro 12.9 inch is a rather heavy device. I have one. And I think probably one of the earlier videos from Bridge showed a user shaking it to show that if you jostled a little bit, it wouldn't come loose from the hinges. Mm-hmm. Is the attachment mechanism equally robust for that heavy iPad Pro?
That's a really good point. It is. So the keyboard holds the iPad really well. One of the things that we experienced with the early 12.9s that went out was that just the sheer size of the Pro and its weight meant that, you know, once it gets to sort of 140 to 150 degrees, something's got to give, and that means the iPad, you know, will go full through to the 180. But ultimately what it's allowed us to do was to create a really flexible mounting mechanism for the iPad, which gives you that laptop-like experience. Because one thing that we've actually noticed, and it's really common customer feedback, is when you use the smart keyboard for Apple, the screen is so big, and when it's fixed at a single viewing angle, it actually, it's great when you're sitting on a desk, but when you want to sit on your lap or when you're in bed or something like that, you need to have the flexibility of a different viewing angle, and that's where our mechanism, you know, gives you that flexibility.
So you use the smart so explain it to me. You use the smart connector on the iPad Pro 12?
We do not.
Because of what you just explained.
Exactly. Okay. I think that's one of the probably about five or six different reasons we don't use the smart connector. But it's restrictive. The smart connector has to be sitting at a particular degree, and if it's one or two off, then it loses connection to the cable.
Okay.
Which is a really frustrating user experience.
What about the iPad Pro 9.7? Same deal?
Same deal. It's the exact same philosophy. It's the restriction of the smart connector.
Okay.
It's the difficulty for availability. You know, from an MFI standpoint, that little component that you've got to license, there's a long lead time on those.
Is it hard to communicate that philosophy to the customer who says, hey, it's not using the smart connector? I mean, is that a challenge?
it's a huge challenge, actually. This is probably the first time I've been able to articulate why we don't do it. Not only is there a big license fee to Apple, but we can only get them in small volumes because they're the companies that manufacture that component, they all go to Apple. And as a result, it's very difficult for us to get hold of it. We can get them for R&D purposes tomorrow. But to go into mass production, it's challenging. Mm. And also, you've got to think, Bluetooth 3.0 just works. You know, our keyboards connect flawlessly. They don't drop out. There's no interference. There's no lag. It's such a proven technology.
I can attest to
kind
that.
Why change it? You know, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, I've used them, and what Nicholas says is true. It works very well. I never had a problem. So throughout the time that you took over the business, have you seen, I don't want to get into proprietary data, but I take it your product line is growing and sales are growing as people become more conscious of this ability to use keyboards on their iPad, plus the fact that Apple's kind of blessed the whole thing. There was a time when we made fun of people who used keyboards and we go, no, you're using it wrong. But nowadays, it's a thing.
It is. You're right. You touched on it. Apple were late to the party because, you know, obviously when they released the iPad, it had a particular intent, which was around mobile content consumption. But very quickly, you know, just through the user behavior and user habits, they've really discovered that it's actually an amazing content creation tool. And for that, you need input devices. And like it or lump it, the keyboard's going to be around for some time because at the end of the day, people are always going to need to type, irrespective of sort of how AI develops and so on. But the thing that we found, John, was the fact that when Apple released their keyboard for the 9.7, for example, our keyboard that also fits the 9.7, our sales doubled. And for us, that really added validation. But it's a bit of a stigma that's still out there, which is, you know, people really still don't understand or don't realize that actually a keyboard will work with an iPad. And as I said, for about 72% of the population that use iPads, that's all you need. So there are multiple different benefits to using something that's mobile, it's light, it's always connected to the internet, it's just there for you. And that's something that we're really trying to harness as a business as well, as you know, we're building a brand persona which is around quality, innovative, and sleek design and reliable. And you know, as we start to think about how we apply that, that's, you know, we're trying to simplify people's lives. You don't need five or six devices. If you've got something that you can go to a cafe with and be just as productive as you would if you took your 15-inch MacBook Pro versus sitting on a bus or on a plane or at the, you know, the gate waiting to get on it. We give you the power to unlock that iPad in a package that's, let's face it, a third of the size of your laptop.
Have you seen any evolution in the thinking about the keyboard usage and the keys, the function keys? I won't mention the touchpad on the MacBooks because it's irrelevant. Might not be too irrelevant in the future, but keyboards evolve and change, and people's usage changes. Have you seen any evolution there?
Look, we've always got to continually innovate, and looking at different technologies of how you can apply it to a keyboard is obviously very important. I grew up on a farm, very simple guy, and design philosophy is sort of keep it simple, stupid. You know, at the end of the day, yes, we need to innovate, but also we want to do what we do exceptionally well. And I think if you start to overcomplicate things, particularly around a keyboard, what does it need to do? Well, it needs to type, and it needs to type really, really well.
Because do you use a scissor mechanism, or do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
Again, thoughts about Butterfly, or is that an Apple patent?
No, it's just the stock standard. It's the same as the original MacBooks. It's a traditional key, very low profile. As we've evolved, we've been able to get key travel from around 1.8 millimeters now down to about 1.3, 1.4, which is going to be.
I like that. I like a short throw keyboard. I've used the keyboard and it's a nice touch. It feels great. Although I do like my Butterfly on my MacBook a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's my, I think you either love that or hate it. We've got half of the guys in the office here on their MacBooks.
I know.
Like it, but some don't.
It's like a 50-50 split from what I can tell. Yeah. People love it and people hate it. It's amazing.
Yeah. But that's personal preference. But also at the end of the day, we are a small company. So, we need to make calls on how we, implement new technologies and whether we continue to develop or we just go with what we know in terms of just get the basics right.
Sure.
And go from there.
And a quality scissor mechanism with a 1.3 millimeter throw is pretty nice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So since we talked last, when I did that interview with you in 2014, the email interview, you have moved, correct, from Singapore to Utah.
We have Utah. So we're now based in Park City for a number
Why?
Of different reasons.
I want to hear the story because I used to be a big skier. So I want to hear the story.
Well, that may have something to do with it. Look, building this business in Singapore, although I absolutely love Asia and love Singapore, it's a fantastic place. Really, if we were to really put our efforts in and try and make the most of growing this business, we needed to be in the US because from a consumer market perspective, this is where it's at. And invariably, the two biggest catalysts were, one, as we started to grow the business, we raised did Series A last year where we raised just over $4 million in capital from a private equity company. We then started to make some fairly significant hires and ultimately we were hiring, industry people from the US or expats and so on from Australia or the UK. And it just didn't make sense. We needed to be in the market. So we made the decision to move to the US, looked at the usual spots, Bay Area, East Coast. We picked a good spot. And the preface behind this was, used to be working with Adobe. I spent a lot of time here. Invariably skip Salt Lake City and come straight to Park City and just fell in love with the place. There aren't many places in the US or frankly the world where you can be literally on a ski hill and 30 minutes away from an international airport that you can get you anywhere very, very quickly. So
that's the attraction of Colorado is you can in March, you can go skiing in the morning and come back and play golf in the afternoon down in Denver.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And look, that was the location was one. Access to talent was a huge other element to it, knowing that we've got Skullcandy literally down the road. Funnily enough, our offices now are actually Skullcandy's original offices. So we're in where they sort of started that business. You've got Zag, Jaybird, Goal Zero, and a number of others sort of sitting down in Salt Lake City. So there's a huge amount of talent in the industry around here. And you know, Utah as a state growing very, very fast. It's, you know, the Silicon Slopes, as they call it. There's a huge amount of, you know, investment, IP, know-how, people in the industry who just, you know, are excited and great business people. So we wanted to capture that, and we have. So here we are, and we're very fortunate. We've got a team of 15 people now who are all, you know, really experienced in what they do. They're all passionate about the outdoor life that we have around here. So it's that balance of lifestyle and work which works. And
boy, I know that. Yes, indeed.
That's it. And since being here, it's worked. We've successfully closed Best Buy as a new customer, so we're now, you know, nationwide in around 700 stores with our full range, which is just fantastic, and really starting to position ourselves well to hopefully achieve what we're trying to.
Does Best Buy take a big chunk of your profits?
yes.
It's a tricky question.
tricky question, but, you know, it's all part of the game.
Yeah.
You need to structure the business to cater for all the channels that you go for, and you know, Best Buy are fantastic partners for us. You know, we're getting a lot out of it, and hopefully they are too.
So what's next? Anything on the drawing board you'd like to share with me? Anything exciting? I'm not talking about any secrets, but I mean, if you've got some something you want to tell me about vision for, you know, keyboards may not be with us forever. You know, I write a lot about an artificial intelligent agents, and there's Siri, and there's Mac dictation. And some people would argue, maybe convincingly, that in the future, we'll be all dictated to our computers, and we won't be typing anymore.
Look, I've got no doubt there'll be a point in time when that happens, but between now and then, there's an awful lot of keyboards that need to be sold.
That sounds great.
If you look at it, now, there's about 300 million plus iPads in the market. And yes, iPad sales have been declining, but I've said since day one is that Apple have built a phenomenal tablet. The reason sales are down is because at the consumer level, they're not having to upgrade as much. The iPad average lifespan is between 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually getting to an interesting renew point where we are now seeing iPad sales start to pick up again. And
well,
I think
Tim Cook said the iPad Pro was going to cause the curve to bottom out. Hasn't
and
yet,
it is.
Unfortunately.
Well, yeah. We had a Gartner call a couple of weeks, about 2 weeks ago, which gave us some data around at the consumer level. The growth rate or the decline rate is now slowing dramatically, and it's now about a negative 2.5.
Yeah.
And that's from 11% last Q4. But where it's really interesting is in the enterprise, with an enterprise growth rate of around 12.5%. I believe, according to Gartner, this year, there'll be around 5.8 million iPads shipped to the enterprise in the US, just ahead of China, where there'll be about 5.2 million iPads shipped. So that in itself is a huge area, particularly when in the enterprise you've got a much higher attach rate on a keyboard. So I suppose to answer your question, John, the roadmap for us is still focused on do what we do and do it very, very well. We've learned an awful lot over the last 12 months. We've made a lot of mistakes over the last 12 months, but I think as a business we're in a very, very good position now with a great foundation. We've got great capability. We've got great product roadmap. We've got some exceptionally exciting things to that will be announced at CES, both in product and in partnership, which, you know, hopefully will really put us in a great position to accelerate through 2017. Beyond that, that's when we're going to start to look at how we diversify and how we really expand the business.
That's great. That's great. And you've really summed things up really nicely, and that's a great place for us to finish because we're just about out of time. So thank you for this grand tour of your business, and tell us where customers can find you. What is the website? And then if they want to contact you personally, how do they do that?
So bridgekeyboards.com is our website.
All one
so
word.
That's obviously all one word, BRYDGE, keyboards.com. Mm-hmm. That's where, you know, our own presence. Anyone can send me an email at nick@bridgeglobal.com and happy to get back to them. From a retail perspective, though, Best Buy, you know, we're in about 700 stores, so you're more than welcome to walk in and buy one of those great little keyboards that sit next to Zag and Logitech, and hopefully you'll get an awful lot out of it.
Cool. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This has been a really nice story to hear, and I wish you all the best, and we'll talk later about maybe getting me another one for the iPad Pro 12-inch. We'll see.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Really good to speak to you.
Thanks for being on the show. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed the chat I had with Nick Smith. And we'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.